There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser will be bringing us the usual Motorsports Mondial and a tribute to Phil Hill. This is podcast number 301, September 3rd, 2008. Stephen.
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From vans to vans, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we always thank Yahoo Ads. On today's program, is Kimi still machismo? Takuma Sato making a comeback? Bye-bye, DC-ness. Hello, Vettelness. Tribute to Phil Hill. And, of course, an interview with Tony Kanaan. And let's not forget, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How are yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely wonderful and pleased that I had a little respite over the weekend. We had our Labor Day holiday. Gave us an extra day to extend the weekend. And, of course, the barbecue kept the going, and the hot dogs were sizzling. So, no, very, very nice. And, of course, we are looking forward to Spa-Francorchamps, I believe, to be really a man's track, as far as I'm concerned.
Until the FIA gets a hold of it next year. Well, apparently, there are rumors going around right now that they're going to shorten the track and get rid of some of the fast sections because they're dangerous.
Of course. Pretty soon, racing will not be a sport, but a leisurely pastime.
Why don't they just put them on bicycles or something, you know? Maybe that would be a little bit more safer.
No, that would be really dangerous. Have you watched the Tour de France? Once they start falling, they just keep going down the mountain.
Yeah, but it's rarely fatal.
Well, I'm hoping nothing like that happens, but everybody does love Spa-Francorchamps, and I shouldn't say it's a man's track because you never know. Danica may do well in the Honda test postseason and become an F1 driver by next season. So, I just better shut up now. But anyway,
I seriously doubt it after seeing her race in Detroit. She's not going to Formula One.
Keep up the good work, Steve, for keeping an open mind. Let's welcome Nasser Hamid. Nasser, how are you? Welcome to the studio. Hope the Camry is doing well.
Camry is doing well, and so am I. Thank you. Hello to everybody. How is the Duke of Dijon doing?
The Duke of Dijon is doing pretty good, polishing his shield and looking forward to Spa. I know you like Spa a lot, and of course,
very much so.
One of your favorite drivers, the man you think is, you know, pretty machismo, Kimi Raikkonen, should have a resurgence, and Ferrari with, obviously, the fastest motor in Formula One right now.
As you know, the last three Formula One races at Spa, they were all won by Kimi Raikkonen, and as I was driving here, I was thinking, like I've said many times, you know, top-line drivers don't forget how to drive a race car when they're in a slump. I think if he wins this race, he will be world champion because Ferrari package is very strong.
It is very strong. They've got the most powerful motor now. It's proven. People have done a lot of analyzing and looking at statistics. And apparently Renault is down 30 horsepower and McLaren is right in between. So it depends. You know, the people who have less horsepower have to take a little more wing off.
Who's driving for Renault?
Huh? Oh, that really cool guy, Fernando.
Oh, great.
Machismo de España.
I just wanted to hear that.
But they'll be fine. Renault is always happy because you know what? They're in France. And as
Spa is in France now?
What?
I mean, has there been a shift in geography now?
No shift.
Or are you looking at the CIA map?
I'm looking at the CIA map, which is one I keep.
Spa has moved to Loire Valley.
Exactly. Next to Mick Jagger's house. My favorite quote from Kimi Raikkonen is like this. What's happened has happened.
There you go.
There's no use crying about it.
It's simple. It is what it is. Yeah.
No milk, you know, blah, blah, blah. So Kimi still is Mr. Machismo from Finland. And I think he'll be back on top because these slumps usually last a little while for the Finnish drivers.
But that's not what Bernie wants. Bernie doesn't want Kimi back as champion. He's not doing enough to promote the sport.
Well, I was going to bring that up later on, but you know, is it really important what Bernie thinks? Bernie doesn't like Fernando or Kimi Raikkonen because they're not, you know, the promoters of Formula One. They're not
because they're not doing a bunch of stuff for him for free.
Exactly. But some of these drivers are quiet, reserved, and they don't want to be in the limelight.
Well, not only that, but most of these guys have huge public schedules based on their sponsorship deals and for their teams. They don't really want to have to take time out of their private lives to promote Bernie's, you know, line Bernie's pockets with a little more money.
And Bernie, you know, so he's had 2 years of Alonso, 1 year of Kimi. He's hoping for a change this year. He's not rooting for Kimi Raikkonen, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. He probably would like to see Lewis Hamilton, though he's not very pro-British, but that would be good for the sport as far as publicity goes, maybe.
That's true, because Lewis Hamilton, I mean, he's already got a book out. I don't think Fernando has a book out. Or Kimi. These guys just relax.
Exactly.
But Hamilton likes to be in the... maybe he's still not a champion yet. Maybe Hamilton, if he becomes world champion, might calm down a little bit.
And again, it comes down to the fact that most of these guys are spending their time making themselves money and not Bernie.
I like that. Nasser is dying to tell me something right now.
Well, Fernando's book will be in the form of text messages.
Well, thank you very much, Nasser. You know, we've got to get a
public reading done by public reading done by Pedro de la Rosa.
I'm going to stare into the studio.
I'm going to get a drummer full time.
To riff.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Nasser. But Fernando will be fine and will become world champion once again.
He will. And I want him to be at Ferrari, but with a difference than you. I want him with Sebastian Vettel as the teammate. So we see how good these two guys are. I'm not taking sides.
Exactly.
And talking of Fernando, he is featured. He's the first featured mark name in the new segment we have. What's in your iPod, which is coming up later today.
That's a great new segment. Keep up the good work. And I know Fernando is always in your Motorsports Mundial because deep down inside, you adore him.
I do. I do like the racer and him, just like I like the racer and Kimi Raikkonen. And I got to tell you something. Funny, we're having this conversation between Alonso and Raikkonen. A lot of motor racing is at the top. Drivers are very equally talented. A lot of it is commitment, dedication. And you really see the difference between, you know, last year when I said that Alonso is a complete package, probably the best driver, you look at his performance in Renault now, which that car really shouldn't be where he's bringing it, and his times compared to his co-teammate, and you look at Raikkonen compared to his teammate. I mean, there's a difference in terms of commitment and application. So I do have a lot of respect for him as the race car driver, don't get me wrong. But I like firing the Rogers rocket every now and then.
And the Rogers rockets do fire quite heavily.
Oh, yeah. They normally fire prematurely.
Yeah. Exactly. Understood, Nass. And you know what? I do have thick skin, and I can take
And it. They are, and they're like mobile Scud launchers. They can fight out of state also, as I witnessed in Indianapolis some years ago.
Absolutely. I can fire on all stages.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's move on. Takuma Sato possibly coming back with a test with Toro Rosso. Well, I mean, we've talked about Takuma Sato's marketing plan. I mean, for Toro Rosso.
Well, he carries a lot of sponsorship typically, and then also the fact that he can theoretically bring Honda engines with him to Toro Rosso, which, you know, Gerhard's no dummy. Free motor or cheap motors are better than paying out the nose to Ferrari for motors that have never won a race for any other mark but Ferrari. So you kind of, you gotta take your you know, I think Ferrari picks the teams they sell them to so that that doesn't happen, but I see Nasser wants to throw in his two bits.
No, I'll wait for your complete dollar to be spent first.
Well, no, I think Takuma Sato, I think he's a talented driver. I think he has something to offer, and people like to sell Red Bull in Japan. I'm sure they would like to pick that market up. And like you said, it could possibly bring Honda engines. And Honda engines have become dependable. It's more or less their package at Honda that's bad. But Honda's famous for making great motors. So I think it could be great. It could be Bourdais and Takuma Sato. Or it could be Buemi and Sato. Or it could be Senna and Sato and Buemi as tester.
Well, there's a report that both Sebastian Buemi from Switzerland, who is a Red Bull, young driver, and Sato will be test driving for the team this anytime now. And, this does not bode very well for Monsieur Bourdais. I would like to see Sebastian Bourdais get another fair shake at, Formula One. You know, throwing a guy in Formula One with the back of the bus operation with Sebastian Vettel as a teammate is really, putting a guy in a put on a pool and draining the water, basically. You're exposed.
Not only that, but I think Bourdais will be there next year because I think he's going to perform well. For instance, at Spa, Bourdais has experience on the Spa track from F3000. And I don't know. I think he will pick up the pace a little bit. He's catching up on Vettel, but he's just not comfortable in the car.
Yeah, but the thing is, in Formula One, so much is money and politics. So if Sato brings in 10, 15, you were talking about his Sato marketing plan. His marketing plan is a big check from Honda Motor Company. So if he brings in a lot of money and if Buemi does very well in testing and he's their own driver, and, there's politics involved here too. He's their own person, so they might throw him. But I tell you, with all these, guys, everybody's dying to see, Moi included, Grosjean, Buemi, Bruno Senna. Some of these guys, unfortunately, not because of their lack of talent, but because the way things turn out, some of them are going to fall on their booty pretty hard.
Yeah. So
we'll just never get a chance.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Bourdais stays, but, we have to have un Français.
Yeah, but if Grosjean comes in, de facto Français via Switzerland, that's an interesting situation.
Yes.
But he is half French. His mother is French, and he's French-speaking, so that's fine. But the guy is a very quick racer, and I would love to see him in Formula One.
He will be in Formula One, as Grosjean will be very possibly replacing Nelson Piquet.
Yeah.
Nelson Piquet has got he's another one who's got to do well in the next following races.
Yeah. He thinks he's better or at least as good as Lou Hamm. And if he is, then wouldn't be half a second difference between him and the other guy. What's his name?
El Hombre.
Muy macho.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think Nelson, once again, maybe slowly getting more comfortable in the car. I want to give these younger guys, the benefit of the doubt. So let's see what happens with Piquet and everybody else. I hope they make it. Because once you get kicked out, it's really hard to get back in.
Especially if you've only got 1 year.
Yeah, if you get dropped by a team, it's like, these young driver development program, Red Bull, Honda, Toyota, Mercedes, Renault. If one of them drops you, why would another manufacturer pick you up?
Exactly. Yeah. Getting back to Ferrari real quickly, Massa, of course, on a roll, he's feeling more macho than anybody anymore. And it's true. He is going to be tough to beat, especially in qualifying. He's got a certain je ne sais quoi that's completely out of control.
Well, if his speed holds as it has the last couple of races, then he's going to be tough to beat.
Exactly. And I mean, Kimi Raikkonen is not the greatest qualifier, and right now I think Massa's got an edge on him.
Yeah, especially in qualification. Kimi's never really been great at that one fast lap. He's usually better in longer runs. And Felipe seems to have the Ferrari down pat for getting that one quick lap that you really need to get to the top of the field.
Exactly. Any quick predictions on Spa, Nasser?
I always go out on a limb, so this time I'm just going to say
Ferrari.
No comment.
No comment?
Well, it will be the usual suspects.
You believe that?
Oh, yeah. Who else is going to bypass Hamilton and the Ferrari driver?
And now it's starting to get a little dull. Valencia was dull. I'm hoping that we have some weather at Spa So maybe Honda can do something interesting, Renault, and maybe Red Bull.
And you know who will be the biggest sufferer if it rains?
Felipe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's always, but it's always a few good laughs, too.
But I would, you know, if Felipe Massa can pull this off and win this championship, I cannot even think of a major upset over such a highly rated teammate.
I agree.
Yeah.
That will be brutal. That will
be very brutal, and it will be a really, really tremendous job on his part.
I think it will be a fantastic job on Massa's part.
And I'm going to tell you why, Clark, okay? We're sitting here, what, 6,000-7,000 miles away. If you listen or read people who, like, we're talking journalists like Alan Henry or Nigel Roebuck, I'm referring to people, not exactly these people, but racing journalists who have been going to each and every Formula One race for the last 20, 25 years, okay? When you listen to them talk about Kimi Raikkonen and Massa, I mean, they don't even talk of Massa in the same breath, you know, because they just think, like I think that Kimi is a much faster driver, is a very talented driver. But for Massa, if he can put this thing together and beat Kimi Raikkonen, then I mean, I may have to eat two crows, one from Sao Paulo, one from Rio.
And it's true. A lot of journalists have just written off Felipe Massa as really unable to keep up with Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah.
And I think just because Kimi was Michael Schumacher's replacement, always seemed so, so fast, and now he's just not to grips with the car. It could be a tire problem, setup, I'm not sure.
Well, according to his fellow countryman and two-time world champion, Mr. Hakkinen, all problems are psychological. I don't buy this thing that he has a problem with qualification and tires, because if that's the problem, how come his teammate is doing so well? You know?
No, I agree. Yeah, yeah. Psychology is 99% of the job.
Whether he had a dispute with somebody at Ferrari, whether he lost interest or just doesn't care, I mean, I don't know.
It started with the Alpine Star suit. He was protesting something. And there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes that we just don't know.
Oh, about. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Kimi is not... He's not the happy camper we thought he was. And this happens to a lot of teams. I mean, yeah. You go to where you want to go, and...
Yeah. I think I recall something like that happened last year,
really,
too.
Really? To somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, world champion?
Yeah, two times.
Yeah, these things, it's funny how Formula One is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. So kudos to Felipe Massa. I hope he does well. And obviously, horsepower is a big deal at this track. And once again, I think Renault's not going to be. I'm hoping they get out of Q2, but it could be.
Okay, I have a question. Where did Ferrari get another 30 horsepower if the engines are frozen?
Oh, that's really simple. They have this relationship with the FIA that's a little closer than most.
Well, you know what happened when some weeks ago or months ago when they requested some sort of exemption or whatever to
They're
do something.
They're pushing the envelope of the rules a little bit further. They had some oil passages that they wanted to change. They submitted the request to the FIA, which you can do.
Safety and FIA, reliability and all that stuff.
Right. And the FIA could either say yay or nay.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think Renault needs to go down that path. I think you need to be a little more aggressive on developing that motor within the rules, which is not happening anymore. And, ever since the mass damper at Renault, they've become skittish, frightened. I don't like it.
Well, ultimately, if you submit an engine modification and it's approved, can the FIA go back on that and go, oh, oops, we made a mistake?
I don't know. The FIA have unlimited power.
They have done these things. You know, if you watch the 82 San Marino Grand Prix, that's why the British teams boycotted. They passed a regulation, whatever it was, ruling. And this is mentioned in the start with James Hunt and Murray Walker. They passed a ruling regarding these, they were water tanks. They had, they would drain them during the race and fill them before the end to meet the weight requirement. So anyway, FIA passed a regulation, and then Ferrari protested. So they reversed that. So the British team said, hey, screw you. We won't take part in the San Marino Grand Prix. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
So, and also even last year, I think it was with the 2 years ago with the mass dampers when the technical committee had passed the mass dampers and then FIA took their own stewards to court.
Exactly.
So, it's basically a personal, agenda, like whatever Mr. Max Mosley wants.
And apparently, speaking of Max Mosley, Bernie has now opened his arms and said, "Max, come back to Papa." They're now a couple.
I thought that was Max Mosley's line.
Something like that. Well, they exchange lines deep in the.
Yeah, he probably just deep in the dungeon.
Yeah. But I mean, what a turnaround! At the months ago, we thought Max was finished, and now Bernie and Max are back as skipping lovers.
You know, they can do whatever they want, and they will anyway. I just hope that they do not ruin Formula One like open wheel racing was screwed, because it doesn't take much to screw things up. Now the teams have a sort of a union association, and how far they will go, who knows. But I would hate to see a breakaway series and Honda and Ferrari in one series and three other team in another series. We don't need that.
No, I agree. I want the whole thing to stay together, and I think it will. Now, there was some interesting talk from BMW and Renault last week where they're hoping to bring back turbo.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. 1.5 liters, smaller engines. I don't know if it's money savings, but the turbo era was pretty exciting.
Well, it's coming back in IRL, as you
know. It is coming. Yeah. They announced it, I think, in, 2011?
Yeah.
Exactly. IRL is coming back. And I don't, I thought the turbo in Champ Car was pretty fun to watch and added a little excitement. It was more fun for the drivers as well. Turbo is a good idea.
I'm going to love Formula One, whether it's turbo or two CV engines.
Two CV?
Yeah, as long as they make a lot of noise.
Exactly. You want the two CV screaming.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Dachez-vous.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I have adapted to the V8s, even though the V10s were just such a wonderful sound.
No, I like that, turbo, V6, V10, V12, BRM even came out with 16-cylinder. So, that's what Formula One to me is, not this spec series. And I hate this one-tire supplier, and I don't like that at all. So I want competition and companies from all over the world jumping
competition
in.
Competition on more than one level.
Exactly.
Not just the cars, but the tires.
Yeah. And there's a lot of debate about that. A lot of people don't like tire wars because they think that the tire shouldn't be part of making a decision on who wins the world championship. I don't know. It's all over the place. The arguments are everywhere.
No, but, that's what competition is.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely. And I agree. And hopefully 2009 will be more exciting. We've got to get away from this frozen engine thing because I think it takes away from racing. And it's Ferrari and McLaren.
Well, it's pretty much what we talked about when it was proposed, and that he who has the best engine at the time of the freeze is going to dominate the sport for the next X number of years.
I agree.
And it's starting to roll into that because Renault won the final season, but they were so keyed on full-blown development that the engine that they ended that season with was not the engine they went into the freeze with.
I agree, and not only that, but I think Ferrari's doing a better job of manipulating the rules, and Renault needs to take more gambling.
Well, they need to basically look at ways to improve the engine through the rules and even push the rules and try to ram them through.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Motorsports Mondial. Don't forget, we've got a Phil Hill tribute and, of course, an interview with Tony Kanaan, and his love for Rubinho is outstanding. So we'll be back in 60 seconds.
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by the Holiday Inn Select Indianapolis Airport. This Holiday Inn Select is a full-service, atrium-style hotel and conference center. While a guest there, make use of the free, high-speed internet access, indoor pool, and fitness center. Or enjoy the good life at the Chanteclair restaurant with its award-winning French cuisine and strolling violinist. Or race over to the spot of F1 Weekly's Listener Appreciation Friday social event, Benchwarmer Sports Bar. Catch all the race action on multiple TVs while enjoying the food and daily drink specials. The hotel is located directly across from the Indianapolis International Airport and provides free 24-hour shuttle service and guest parking. It's close to downtown and to the site of the 2007 Formula One United States Grand Prix, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which makes this hotel an ideal choice for business, pleasure, and for the listeners of this podcast. Call for your reservation today to 1-317-244-6861 or 888-HOLIDAY, or book online through www.hiselect.com. You know you want to.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. And now, of course, it's everybody's favorite segment as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and, of course, our wonderful and gracious guru, Mr. Nasser Hemi. Nasser, welcome back to the studio. I hope your dinner break was not only satisfying but filling as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And the guru says, greetings and racing regards to all. Today we have action from Southern California to San Marino. And we will start with racing on two wheels, the San Marino Grand Prix at Misano Adriatico in Italy. Track is located near Rimini, which is the hometown of Signor Federico Fellini. The Ducati Marlboro Monster, that is Casey Stoner, captured his seventh successive pole position and in the race crashed again, out from the lead for the second time in a row, handing the win yet again to Signor Valentino Rossi. And I was a little disappointed to read this. Back home in Australia, Stoner was described as a high-speed drug pusher by the anti-tobacco group ASH, ASH, which is not very nice.
No, it's not. But, you know, some of these anti-tobacco people can get really, really out of control. I mean, it's just like some of the, you know, mothers against drunk driving. Sometimes they...
Any agenda driven, yeah.
Exactly. Once you have an agenda, you can hit the extreme rather quickly. But I was a little bit disappointed with Casey Stoner blaming the tires for his crash when Valentino Rossi kept saying, oh, no, it is the pressure for moi.
Yeah. Valentino Rossi, man. Quite a character, I'll say. A victory is win number 68 for Rossi, and he's now tied at the top with fellow Italian Giacomo Agostini as the most successful GP rider. And Giacomo Agostini, the great ego, as they call him, he was the big kahuna when I started following, you know, motorsports early 70s, and he was in the news all the time. Rossi is now enjoying a 75-point lead over Casey Stoner. So as long as he keeps finishing races, I think Rossi will regain his world championship. His team, Yamaha teammate Jorge Lorenzo, was second. Third was another Spanish rider, Tony Elias, for Ducati. Italian rider Loris Capirossi is now the Rubens Barrichello of MotoGP, having competed in 277 events, which is about 37% of races since championship was started in 1949. Of course, they do a lot more races now, like in Formula One, compared to the 60s and 70s. Next round is September 14th in Indianapolis when Brickyard becomes Bikeyard. And it will be very nice if Nicky Hayden can win there, you know,
that
local
would be fantastic,
ball.
And the road course is very nice. And Indianapolis puts on a pretty good show, so I think this is going to be very successful.
Absolutely. It's a very fan-friendly place. And, you know, he's from a place called Owensboro, Kentucky, which is only a few hundred miles from Indianapolis, so he will have a lot of his homeboys there, you know.
Absolutely.
So we wish him all the best. And also, you know, this track, Misano Adriatico, this is the track where, unfortunately, American rider Wayne Rainey had his accident, which, you know, ended his career. And I hear that I've met him a couple of times here at Laguna Seca. His house basically overlooks the Laguna Seca racetrack. So hopefully one of these days I'll try to hook up with him and maybe do an interview with him.
That's a good idea now, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we move to F3 Euro Series, racing on four wheels from Brands Hatch, England. Nico Hülkenberg won the opening round ahead of Kudai Tsukakoshi of Japan and Yann Clairet of France in race two. Franck Mayeux took his first win of the season ahead of fellow Francais and Clark Rogers' cousin Jean-Carl Vernet. Renger van der Zande from Netherlands was third. Hülkenberg leads the championship by 13 points, and next round is on the weekend of September 21st in Barcelona. And, you know, Hülkenberg winning this championship will not be a surprise. He's already a test driver for Williams, but I would like to see him in GP2 next year.
Yeah, I would too. And to be honest with you, I thought he'd be dominating this series a little bit more, but obviously he's up against some good talent.
Yeah, but he's doing well, and he's had some problems. And this is his second year in this series. I think last year he was third, I believe, in the championship. The interesting thing, you know, last year Grosjean won the championship and Buemi was second. And this year Grosjean won the GP2 Asia, and Buemi was second. So they're going in lockstep with Grosjean staying ahead. So we'll see how it goes in Formule 1 for both of them.
I think Nelson or Piquet is probably following that too.
Yeah. Okay, also in action from Brands Hatch. And this is, by the way, not the full Brands Hatch Grand Prix circuit, just the Indy type, you know, which is about just over a mile, I think. German touring cars, also known as DTM, they were in action there. Timo Scheider was the winner in his Audi over the Mercedes of Paul Di Resta. Another Audi driven by Matthias Ekstrom was third. Now we go to this yet another new racing series. You know, people talk, complain about sponsorship. I don't know how these new series are coming.
You know, and I was thinking of the same thing. Now, are all these football teams donating money to these teams? How are they getting some money here?
Or are they making some money off of this by licensing the names?
I don't know what the deal here is, but it's amazing. You know, the A1GP came, Super League. What's next? You know, a rugby league racing team also.
And what about American football?
Yeah, exactly.
We could have the 49ers racing league.
Yeah, Randy Moss already has a racing team in NASCAR. Maybe he can start his own series. The Dennis, I'm looking forward to the Dennis Rodman Motorsports
series. Now, that's going to be exciting, but tattoos will be mandatory.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Thank you very much. We're always on the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think this is going to last.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay, the series, Super League Formula from Donington Park. Italian Davide Rigon won the first ever race of this new series, driving for, check this out, Chinese football team Beijing Guoan. And I apologize if I'm screwing up the name. Second was the all-Italian combo of Enrico Tocacello and AS Roma. A British driver, Duncan Tappy, was happy to be third for Tottenham Hotspur. You want to hear something interesting about Enrico Tocacello? And this is the kind of research we do at F1 Weekly to bring you the constant variety of motorsports news. Enrico Tocacello is from Italy, of course, and has been racing for quite a few years. But if you look at the result of A1 GP race from Durban, South Africa, a couple of years ago, he drove for Team Pakistan.
Sneaky.
Yeah, I know. You know, Adam Khan had some, he was injured a little bit, and they wanted to have a driver in the car, so he was a temporary homie.
Yeah, I heard there was a lot of accidents, and this race was, they still have some bugs to work
on. No, they had quite a few of technical gremlins in the car.
Apparently the car is very susceptible to electronic gremlins and the V12. Yeah. It was all very interesting.
Yeah, and race two was won by Borja Garcia for Sevilla Football Club. Sevilla being Seville, you know, the city of Seville.
La ciudad de Sevilla in Andalusia, and
you,
España.
You have lived there also.
I have.
How many paellas did you eat there?
One every day.
Oh, really? Okay, now we go from Brands Hatch to Silverstone. From the ex-home to the soon-to-be ex-home of British Formula One racing. British Touring Car Championship winners were race one Jason Plato in a Seat, race two Fabrizio Giovinardi in a Vauxhall, race three Matt Jackson in a BMW. Final race of the season is on September 20th at Brands Hatch. And from British Touring Cars, we go to World Touring Cars from Oschersleben in Germania. Brazilian Augusto Farfus was the winner in race one in a BMW. Second race was another BMW Triumph, this time driven by Spaniard Felix Potrero. So what is Felix Potrero? A poquito macho hombre de España?
Sí.
Thank you. Okay, next race for World Touring Car Championship is in September 20th at Imola, once the home of the San Marino Formula One Grand Prix. But folks, you know, if anybody is near Bologna and you get a chance to check out this track, this is a beautiful, beautiful racing track. Right in a neighborhood, in like a residential area, and in between the track there is a school also. And the Acqua Minerale, you know, thing, just like Oruj dropping down, coming up, it's worth seeing.
Hopefully Formula One will return.
I don't think so.
There was talk about trading the Italian Grand Prix back and forth between
them. No, I don't want to see the race go from Monza.
No, but it was the same thing with Monza. Talk about, you know, swapping the British and French.
Do I need to get the defibrillator out now?
At least.
Onward and upward.
Yes, sir. Okay, now we go also in action at Oschersleben Formula Masters. Race one winner was Chris Van der Drift of New Zealand, and race two winner was Josef Kral of Czech Republic. And Josef Kral, interestingly, in last 2 years he was in Formula BMW, and both years in the World Finals, which is very famous now, BMW World Finals, he finished twice, both occasions, and on both occasions he was disqualified on some technicality.
Hmm.
So I hope Formula Masters do not have a world final. You may get the same treatment there. Okay, World Rally Championship from New Zealand. First and second look set for four drivers, Mikko Hirvonen and Jari Matti Latvala, but both ran into trouble late in the rally, giving Sebastian Loeb in a Citroen a surprise and unexpected victory. His teammate Denny Sordo was second, with Hirvonen salvaging third in his Focus. And you have an update from one of our listeners, so we can do it now or we can come back to it. The choice is yours.
We'll do it at the end of Motorsports Mondial.
Okay, sir. And now we go to Indy Racing League from Belle Isle in Detroit, Detroit, as you will call it. A promoter of this event is Mr. Roger Penske. First win of the series for Justin Wilson. Castro Neves was second after he was told to let Wilson pass following an aggressive blocking move. Tony Kanaan was third, and his interview is coming up after this. Final race of the season is in Chicago this weekend. Indy 500 winner Scott Dixon will be champion if he finishes 8th or better. Castro Neves is second in the championship. In other IRL news, something we already covered, cars will be powered by turbo engines starting with 2011. And hopefully Honda will have some company in competition. And when Robin Miller was covering this IRL race for Speed TV, he mentioned again that I'm pretty sure he's referring to not this season, which is starting this month, or next month, I should say now, but the following season of A1GP, Andretti Green Team will be the franchise for the A1GP. And the plan, according to him, is to put Marco Andretti in that, and also... You know who.
No way.
Muy macho Chiquita de Arizona.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. He's mentioned this a couple of times.
This is going to be exciting. I mean, that's going to... A lot of people are going to watch that.
Yeah.
But this means... So, Marco and Danica...
That's what he's saying. And he's fairly reliable.
The A1GP?
Not the series that's starting this next month. You know, the first race was supposed to start this month at Mugello, got
canceled.
Yes,
they had a postponement.
Now it will start from Zandvoort. I believe it's in first week of October. So Marco and Danica.
Not this season, but next.
Yeah, which will start like, you know, September of next year.
But this is good for Marco because it'll give him a taste of some of the, you know, the getting out of America racing, I call it, which is a good thing to do.
Yeah, but, you know, it's no reference to Marco, any driver. You know, when you go into these things, it's one of those things, you know, you go into A1GP where not the top drivers from each country are racing, and if you don't even perform there, then...
That's true.
The party is over.
I agree. You either but he's dominate. He's
got a permanent career in Indy in the IRL if he wants it. You know, Formula One's a nice little dream to have to maybe do someday, but I don't think his heart's all that much in it.
Yeah, but he's got to listen to Mario.
Yeah. Like Mario said, he better listen to me. Yeah, but you know, Formula One is not a dream that you want to do someday. You know, you just have to have a game plan and stick to it and slug it out. The problem with these young kids, you know, is like we've discussed. They want Luca to call them and offer them send them the private jet.
No, way too much talent already in Europe.
Yeah.
If Marco really is serious about racing in Formula One, he almost has to do a season in GP2.
Yeah, or do a, you know, the problem now in testing is there are so many restrictions in testing that the only way you can really learn the circuit, not just learn the circuit, but also the competition, is go and jump in GP2.
I agree. But, you know, just getting into GP2 is not that easy.
No, I mean, there's a tough drivers there.
I agree. I mean,
In GP2 is not easy. Just ask Grosjean.
Exactly. And I think... If Danica Patrick was intelligent, she should go into GP2. It'd be fantastic for her.
She has no interest in getting to Formula One. She doesn't want to race outside the States.
Well, she raced in Europe. I mean, that's where she
is. She learned that she was homesick the entire time, and it's not something she was in a hurry to go back and do.
Okay, so there we have. Okay, now we go to more action from Belle Isle, American Le Mans Series. An all-Acura podium with Frank Montani and James Rossiter taking the win for Andretti Green Racing. And next year, Acura will move up the food chain to LMP1 class and battle with Audi, but they will still have a presence in the LMP2 also. So this is very good for the series. Grand Am from New Jersey Motorsports Park in Millville, New Jersey, which is not too far from Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. Oswaldo Negri and Mark Patterson were the winners at this new facility. A very nice facility. It's like a motorsports country club. And you can go to their website and get more info if you're interested. And people who own this track, they also own the Virginia International Raceway. And now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
From Fontana, Southern California. Jimmy Johnson from nearby El Cajon was the dominant winner, leading 228 of 250 laps. And for those with interest in history, this is the track built on an old Kaiser steel mill site by Roger Penske, which he sold later to the NASCAR family. And unfortunately, tragedy struck here in 1999 when the very promising Canadian Greg Moore was killed in the final race of the season after signing to drive for Penske in the 2000 season. Very, very good racing talent, I must say. Okay, we have some other information. You know, Berger, we talked about mid-dumper Bordé, but yeah. I'm sure Bordé is feeling the heat. And I hope his F1 career is not fried by Berger, but you never know. Okay, and Red Bull, this must be of interest to you. Okay, now for sale in France, and Bordé demonstrated his Toro Rosso in the streets of Paris last Sunday. So next time you're feeling shot down by the Seine and depressed in Paris, get a can of Le Toro Rouge.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised this happened because when I saw the Citroën team for WRC now being sponsored by Red Bull, which happened a few months ago, I knew this was coming.
Now that's good. And now the Red Bulletin, there, you know, the newsletter, they used to make fun of Manny Coors all the time. Hopefully they will have some positive things to say about Manny Coors.
I doubt it.
Okay, power struggle at Force India. Mike Gascoigne running into same problems he had at Toyota. But this time he may pull out a win over the dentist running the show, Colin Collis, also known as Chavsky, in the pit lane. So there is some trouble brewing in that team.
Yeah.
But it's some power struggle. You know, I want more money. Collis won't release it. But I think, you know, Gascoigne is the designer and he will.
Mali is going to go with the talent here, and that's Gascoigne.
Yeah. And I don't know what Colin brings to the team. You know, he's
Free dental care?
Manager. On site? Yeah. Okay, Clark Rogers, just to keep you happy, we have a new segment, and Miguel from Portugalistan was requesting some motorsports medley, and it takes time to put them all together, and I need a lot of cooperation from Senior Tapia on that. He's been very busy lately, as you know. So we have started a new segment called What's in Your iPod, brought to you in part by Capital One. And I look at what drivers are, you know, everybody is listening to an iPod these days on the track, on the Grand Prix circuit.
I listen to myself on the iPod.
Yeah, well, what's your song? I Wish I Was in Paris.
Yeah, exactly, every day.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, as with anything at F1 Weekly, we will start by tapping into the iPod of Prince of Asturias, the much-loved Muy Macho Hombre de España. And the name, please?
Fernando Alonso, yes. El Hombre.
You got to roll the R's. I like that. Okay, last year, Alonso almost became the first man since Fangio to win back-to-back championships after changing teams. What would have been an incredible achievement was lost due to civil and industrial unrest at McLaren International, and his hopes were further hammered by the discomfort of having a speedy debutante. Such is life. But sun comes up every day and life moves on, and so has Alonso. And he may do that again at the end of this season as things are going. Back to the team where he dethroned Michael Schumacher as world champion. Only now he is wondering why there is no sun in the sky. Gone are the days of mass damper and being a regular race winner. There is no denying of his racing talents, as proof is in the paella every race weekend. His qualifying and race times compared to his teammate will confirm he is championship material whether you like him or not. But as all the great ones have discovered the hard way, no package, no delivery. To find out his flavor of the week in tunes, we scoot over to find young cannibals to give us the answer.
Ooh.
Thank you, NAS, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now I'm going to go ahead and bring us our WRC supplemental from our WRC dude, Mr. J. Streets, in beautiful Northern California. Rally of New Zealand was one of the closest events we have seen in a very long time. It was also the biggest disappointment for many and the biggest surprise for a few. Day one, the stages in New Zealand are classic gravel, fast, flowing, and heavily cambered. They make for very dramatic action when it all goes right, and spectacular offs when it doesn't. The first day started with championship leader Sebastian Loeb sweeping the roads for the other cars. The Citroën suffered a starter problem, arriving to a control 3 minutes late. Rumors around the service park was that it may have actually been team tactics by Citroën to secure better road position for the second day. No rumors with Ford. Their number two man, Latvala, stopped on stage so as not to be clearing the gravel on day two. Day two. The start order for the second leg was set. Ford's first and third, with the Citroëns of Sebastian and Danny Sordo second and fourth, respectively. The second day saw Latvala take the lead for Ford, ensuring he would sweep the roads for Ford's championship, Hope Hervonen. After fighting his way back to the lead, Citroën Loeb took a cue from the Ford playbook and stopped on stage so as not to become the road sweep for the Ford team again. So a lot of this has been going on in WRC with Ford tactics, Citroën tactics, countering Ford tactics, and I think they need to change some of the FIA rules according on how this is going, because it's a little bit weird when you stop on stage because you don't want to be leading because the next team will be sweeping the road. So very weird stuff. Day three, going into the final day, the top four cars of the top two teams were separated by just over 15 seconds. On the final day, everything was going as planned for Ford. Their number one was in first. Their number two was a strong second. But the Citroëns weren't far behind. To make it even sweeter, for newly signed Belgian Duval was sitting in fifth, safely ahead of the rest of the field, but 2 minutes down on the leaders. The last stage is when it all went so terribly wrong for Ford. The Fords and Citroëns were still no more than 15 seconds apart. First, Duval crashed out, then Latvala spun on stage and was unable to continue. Shortly after the Ford of Hervonen passed the stricken Latvala, he too had a run in with the bank, causing a flat tire, which led to a spin and handed the top two spots to the Citroëns of Sebastian Loeb and Sordo. A very strange turn of events for Citroën and a catastrophe for Ford. This puts Sebastian Loeb 8 points up on the Drivers' Championship and Citroën 20 over Ford in the manufacturer's race. A week off, and then we're off to the tarmac of Catalonia. See you on stage, Jay Streets. Keep up the good work, Jay. Another outstanding WRC report, and it is heated between the Fords and the great Marque de France, Citroën. Okay, now we have a somber tribute, the passing of Phil Hill, which was very, very sad during the Monterey Historical Races weekend. He was supposed to attend, couldn't make it. Nass, welcome back to the studio. How are you? And give us this wonderful little tribute here to Phil Hill, our last American-born champion.
First and last, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the recent historic Monterey Historic at Laguna Seca. Mario Andretti was to give Phil Hill a ride in a racing car, and it was billed as the first time both American world champions would be driving together. And unfortunately, it was not to be, as Phil Hill fell sick and was taken to a nearby Monterey Salinas Hospital. And I'm sure you know, and most of our listeners would know, for many years he's been suffering from Parkinson's disease. And it was at this facility last week on August 28 that Phil Hill passed away at the age of 81. And of course, you know, even when it's expected, it's still very sad, and I was very disappointed to hear that. Phil Hill was, and remains to this day, the only American-born Formula One world champion. He was born on April 20th, 1927 in Florida, but moved with his family to Santa Monica in Southern California. where his father was postmaster for the city, and he lived all his life in the same house.
Yeah, exactly. And I recommend the book that is available on the merchandise page. It's excellent.
Early in his career, Phil worked as a mechanic at a Jaguar dealership, International Motors in Beverly Hills. And talk about a small world. Among his co-workers there was Richie Ginther, the same Richie Ginther who would give Honda their first Grand Prix win in 1965 in Mexico City, and Bernard Cahier, the world-famous French photographer who himself passed away recently. And, you know, his son is Paul-Henri Cahier. During a training course in England, Phil Hill was sent there to get training in Jaguar cars and, you know, repairs. Hill took the time to attend the very first Formula One Grand Prix at Silverstone as a spectator in 1950. After racing his MG in the United States, his first major international event was the 1952 Carrera Panamericana in Mexico, where he finished a respectable sixth in his Ferrari. 2 years later, he was second in the same event and was soon making his name all over the world. Through Luigi Canetti, Enzo's man in the United States, he was signed on to drive for Scuderia Ferrari and was second in the 1956 Buenos Aires 1,000 kilometers. And Luigi Canetti was the reason you saw so many American drivers, Phil Hale, Dan Gurney, Richie Gunther, drive for Ferrari. Other victories included Swedish Grand Prix for sports cars in Messina, 5 hours in Italy. In 1957, he won the Venezuelan Grand Prix at Caracas with Peter Collins from England. In 1958, Phil scored the first of his three wins in the Le Mans 24 Hours race with Belgian Olivier Jean-Debien. The year also saw him win his first of three Sebring 12 Hours race. And Phil Hill was the first American to win the Le Mans 24 Hour race. You know, Enzo Ferrari wouldn't he liked him as a sports car driver, wouldn't put him in a Formula One car. So Phil Hill hired a Maserati 250F from Swedish driver Joe Bonnier to make his Formula One debut in the 1958 French Grand Prix at Reims, also known as Reims, as you call it. The death of Luigi Musso in this race forced Enzo Ferrari to put his sports car ace on the Formula One team. Hill's first Grand Prix in a Ferrari was in the German Grand Prix at the old classic Nürburgring. And tragedy again struck the team when Peter Collins was killed while chasing race leader Tony Brooks. At Monza, Hill was third after setting the fastest lap in the race. In the final race of the season at Casablanca in Morocco, he gave up his second place late in the race to help his Ferrari teammate Mike Hawthorn become first British world champion over Stirling Moss. History also records Phil Hill as the last man to win a Formula One race with a front-engine car. This was achieved at Monza in 1960 when he scored his first Grand Prix win. Same track, same team, same result the following season would mark Phil Hill as the first American to become world champion. But in tragic circumstances, his teammate and man who led the championship before the race, German Wolfgang von Trips, was killed on the second lap after colliding with the Lotus of Jim Clark. And as we know, many spectators were also killed. And ironically, Mario Andretti would become America's second world champion in similar tragic circumstances. You know, the day he won the championship, his teammate was killed, Ronnie Peterson at Monza, 78. In the year of 1961 was the high point in Phil Hill's racing career. He also took victories again at Le Mans and Sebring 12 Hours. His third victory at Le Mans came in 1962, and each time his co-driver was Olivier Jean-Debien. And he also won the Nürburgring 1,000-kilometer race, another famous race from the golden days of sports car racing. A mutiny at Ferrari led by Carlo Kitti saw key personnel, Phil Hill among them, start a new team, ATS, which was not a good move, and Hill paid the price in terms of his Grand Prix career. His success in sports car racing continued with victories in the 1966 Nürburgring 1,000-kilometer race and Can-Am round at Laguna Seca. His final year of racing saw him win his last race at Brands Hatch in a Chaparral with English driver Mike Spence in 1967. And you know, it was interesting. Phil Hill also has the distinction of winning the very first race he entered and also the very last race he entered. So pretty impressive there. After his racing career was over, Phil Hill was involved in historic car restoration business, wrote for Road and Track, and also worked as TV commentator. A quiet man with much class and culture, Phil Hill was well respected and will be much missed by racing fans all over the world. And, you know, I like to read some of the tributes that were paid to him. This is from Luca di Montezemolo. I quote, "A man and a champion who gave so much to Ferrari and who has always greatly represented the company's values inside and outside the racing track. Phil and I have always kept in touch throughout the years, and I know I will miss his passion and love for Ferrari very much." End of quote. And this is a note from Ron Dennis. I quote, the record books will remember Phil Hill as the only Formula One world champion to have been born in the USA. But for all who knew him, he will forever be cherished as a perfect gentleman and a man who embodied the true sporting values of motor racing. End of quote. And Autoweek.com has a very nice story about Phil Hill, which was originally published in Automobile Quarterly in 1962. So if you would like to read this, please check it out. If interested, it's on Autoweek.com. And F1 Weekly would like to extend our condolences to the Hill family.
Thank you, Nasser. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, another special interview, which we bring to our listeners. And, of course, Nasser has done it again. This is a great driver who's been driving in the U.S. Open Wheel Series for a number of years. He's very good friends with Rubens Barrichello, the two-legged one. So, Nasser, introduce this driver, please.
Yes, this is Tony Kanaan. The conversation took place at the IRL race at Sears Point, also known as Infineon Raceway. So my thanks to him for taking the time to talk to me. And, of course, he's from Brazil and raced in Europe, and he really came through the tough way, like Nigel Mansell worked hard. There was a time in Europe he was sleeping in the garage of the team to save money and to go racing, and then came here. And has been racing Helio Castroneves for a long time. And I asked him, you know, he was a teenager when his dad passed away. So I asked him who has been the biggest help and influence. And the answer was Rubinho. And he was pleasantly surprised to hear that there is a horse in this country named after Rubens Barrichello. And he said he will let him know. Okay. So it's, and he's a good racer. He's come very close to winning the Indy 500. And that is his main goal right now. And there was a lot of talk he may leave Andretti Green Racing and go somewhere else, but he's staying with them. And he is their man as far as the series is concerned. So thanks again to Tony, TK as they call him here, and hope listeners enjoy the conversation.
Okay, I'm here at Sears Point with Tony Kanaan, full name Antoine Riscala Kanaan Filho. Tony, how are you today, and how is the weekend going so far?
Very good. I mean, it's a beautiful day here in Sonoma, and the weather is being great, and the racetrack is it's awesome, so I can't complain.
You were New Year's gift to your parents, being born on the last day of 1974. What are your earliest memories of motor racing before you got into it yourself?
Watching with my dad, actually, Formula One races in Rio back in the 80s. So that's probably around 82. That's when I first started watching it.
Who were you more interested in, Nelson Piquet or Ayrton Senna?
Senna was always my hero, so always Senna.
Okay, you have won this Granja Viana 500 kart race in your country, I think, 6 times. What is the secret of your success? Because this is a pretty tough competition.
7 times, actually.
Excuse me, moi.
I think it's, you know, the secret's been having good drivers and consistent drivers and you know, just understand how the race goes.
Nigel Mansell worked very hard for his success, and so have you. Can you please tell our listeners about your days in Europe when you were sleeping in team's garage and hustling to get your name recognized?
Well, I mean, I did whatever I could to stay there, and that's, you know, that's what I needed to do. So sleeping in the shop and you know, working my way through, and really, I think apart from giving up a lot of things in my life to be there, I think people realized that I was talented enough, and they gave me an opportunity. And that I was a hard worker, so that's how I think I, you know, I got the success that I got.
What are some of your best memories from racing in Europe?
Racing before the F1 race on Sunday when I was doing Opel Lotus, and winning the Imola Grand Prix after Senna died, the year after he died. So it was probably one of my best memories for sure.
What is your favorite track in Europe?
Spa-Francorchamps.
I'll say that. Okay, who was guiding and was the biggest influence in your racing career before you moved to the U.S.?
Rubens Barrichello. He's still a good friend of mine, and he was definitely a guy that helped me out a lot.
Do you know there's a racing horse in America named Rubens Barrichello? I kid you not.
Oh, I don't know that, so I'll tell him, so it's funny.
Yeah, please tell him. And talking of Rubinho, some years ago you had his helmet at Indy, and he had your helmet at Monaco. Was there a hidden message there, or just two friends trying to do their own thing?
It was like I had a dream to race an F1 car in Monaco, and he had a dream to race in Indianapolis, so we kind of did that, but he took me for a ride in Monaco, and I took him for a ride in Indy.
Great. What is the biggest difference between the European and American racing scene, apart from ovals and better hot dogs at your sponsor 7-Eleven?
I think the people are different. I mean, the fans are totally different, and we have a different way of racing here. We welcome people to the paddock, which in Europe you don't have a lot of chance to do that. So they're all fans. They're all good fans, but it's just different.
Interesting you say fans are different. What is the difference you feel?
Like I said, I mean, here people, some people are more hardcore than there, but it's just the culture, it's different. I mean, fans here, they can get close to us, ask for autographs, and over there, I mean, they don't let anybody in the paddock.
Do you like that as a driver, guys like me coming up to you in your trailer?
I don't mind. I mean, I think it's part of it. That's the way it is in America, and, I'm being here for 13 years, so I think I got used to it for sure.
And we certainly appreciate that. 10 years ago, you were Indy Lights champion ahead of close friend Elio Castroneves and another homeboy, Kiki, Cristiano D'Amara. What were the highs and lows of the season?
On that season?
Yeah.
We're all young, and we're always all trying to make it to IndyCar. So yeah, it was a pretty good fight. So thank God I ended up winning. But the highs was obviously winning a lot of races, and the lows are trying to race against your best friends and beat them. That was probably tough.
You've known Castroneves for quite a while. What is your earliest memory of racing him?
Oh, back in 87. So, for sure, it's... since we're kids, so we grew up together, and here we are, again, fighting for a place on a podium.
Has he given you any dancing tips?
No, I don't know how to dance, and I think he's the best of it. So, no, he hasn't yet.
Okay, I was watching this race live, Michigan 1999, US 500. Please describe the last lap in your words.
The best lap of my life. It's my first win, and I passed Max Pappas on the last corner, so very happy about that.
Now, did you believe that his car was slowing down? I mean, it was just, you took the lead like few yards to go.
No, I did not believe it, but, at one point I'm like, wow, it's true. So I ended up winning the race.
Is that the biggest race of your life?
Nah, I don't think so. It was one of them because it was the first one, but it's going to change. Every year, you have a better race or something that actually is more remarkable. That's one of the best for sure.
What other race winning or driving you cherish more?
When I won the championship in 2004, at the race in Fontana, when I clinched the championship, was special. The race that I won on my dad's birthday last year in Kentucky, I mean, we have a few.
Beating Montoya in that US 500 in a close finish, beating a guy like him, was that more special?
Oh, for sure. I mean, beating Montoya is always a good thing. You don't do that very often.
Yeah, do you hang out with him or go for cheeseburgers in Miami?
He doesn't have a lot of time, but once in a while, we bump into each other.
Yeah, pretty cool guy off the track?
Very good guy. With me, I mean, a good friend of mine.
That's good. Now that you have decided to stay with Andretti Green Racing for 2009, or whatever the name may be, what is more important next season, second IRL championship or first victory at the Indy 500?
At the Indy 500, for sure. I mean, that's something that I want to accomplish.
I was talking to your homegirl, Anna Beatriz, today. I'm going to ask you the same question. What would mean more to you as a driver, victory in the Brazilian Formula One Grand Prix at Interlagos or Indy 500?
Oh, I'll take the 500.
Okay. Okay, your country has produced three. I basically asked you before, but your thoughts on Nelson Piquet, Senior, Fittipaldi, and Senna?
My thoughts? three great drivers, the best of their generation, and nobody's going to top them.
Did you know all of them personally or got to meet them?
Yeah, yeah. I met all of them, and I'm being friends with Nelson and Emerson for quite a while. So Senna, obviously, it was early days, but I knew him too.
Are you rooting for Massa, your homeboy, to win the world championship, or who do you think will win?
I hope so. I mean, you know, he's the only Brazilian that is on the championship hunt, so I'll definitely be rooting for him.
Okay. We have a worldwide audience. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about you as a person, what kind of music you like, what your interests are, apart from Tony Kanaan, the race car driver?
I listen to everything, a lot of Brazilian music, but I like Coldplay a lot. I like Matchbox 20.
How about Sergio Mendes, Brazil 66?
Yeah, that I don't listen to him a lot, but I mean, I heard some of his songs and it's pretty cool. So, I mean, I'm pretty open-minded about when it comes to music, and depends on your mood, that's what you do. So, I mean, I would say, you know, if it's playing on the radio and I like it, I just keep it there.
Finally, how about a message for listeners, please?
Just, you know, keep listening to you guys, keep watching us racing, and stay safe.
I hope I talk to you next year after you have won the Indy 500.
Sure, thank you.
Obrigado, senor.
Thank you.
Very nice meeting you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
TK, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right into the wrap-up. I'd like to say quickly that the San Francisco Formula One group will once again be at the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill at 398 7th at Harrison. You can call them. They're having their Sunday brunch September 7th at 9:30 a.m. and the flag drops at 10. Call them 415-863-1688 in beautiful downtown San Francisco. If you'd like to go to our MySpace site and check us out, that would be really nice. You can make us a friend, myspace.com/F1Weekly. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program, because if you don't listen, we really don't exist. It's like the tree that falls in the forest. You know what I'm talking about, Nass?
She'll be telling the man in the mirror, you're fired.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't want to tell that guy he's fired. So all the listeners, thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody who helps put this program together. Nasser Hamid, Steve Faub, Toby Dawes, David Tapia, and of course, myself, the host with the most. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.